Welcome to On the Ground. I'm Erin Haynes, and I write about race in America for the Associated Press. For this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of race and politics on the road to the 2020 presidential election. I'll be talking to some of my sources, and you'll get to join the conversation about what's happening on the ground. In today's episode, I'm catching up with somebody who always makes me feel smarter. Leah Wright Regeer is a historian at Harvard, but really she's just one of the preeminent thinkers on politics in this moment. Together, we're going to unpack one of the themes I've been thinking about a lot in this election, the idea that there's a Black primary happening within the primary, as Democrats court African-American voters on the path to their party's nomination. But before I bring Leah in, here's my take. So the Democratic field for president features the most diverse group of candidates ever, and I've been watching this primary play out not just in diners in New Hampshire or in the heartland in Iowa, but on the campuses of historically Black colleges, in Black churches across the South, and at gatherings of bedrock institutions like the NAACP or Black fraternities and sororities. To me, the Black primary signals that the Democratic Party isn't going to take African-American voters for granted this time around, centering them as the key to victory in 2020. The Black primary is also an opportunity to highlight the diversity within the Black electorate, which, repeat after me, is not a monolith. Black voters are rural, they're educated, they're blue-collar, they're Midwestern and from the Rust Belt, they're faith voters, they care about the Supreme Court, they have economic anxiety, they're disaffected and left behind. But why does this matter? And what will it all mean when the time comes to cast ballots in a few months? Okay, Leah, let's break this down. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Erin. This is so exciting.
I'm super excited, too. So let's get into it. I mean, you tell me, am I off base here? Are we in the middle of a Black primary? Is this new? And why is there all this attention on Black voters now?
It's a welcome change. There should be attention on Black voters because Black voters, particularly Black women, are the base of the Democratic Party. So Black voters are the most consistent and the most loyal of the Democratic Party's base. During presidential elections, Black voters have consistently shown up and shown out for Democratic candidates. This was crucial in 2008, but in 2012, for example, Black voters really made the difference between Barack Obama, you know, seeing a second term as opposed to Mitt Romney becoming president. And so what we're seeing is that after 2016, where we did see an impact with Black voters, particularly disaffected Black voters in battleground states, we're seeing that the Democratic Party all of a sudden is reinvesting, or at least symbolically reinvesting, in Black voters and saying, you know what? We actually have to make an investment and a commitment to Black voters, not just through symbols, not just through words, but we actually have to show and tell this time around.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, to your point, after Trump's election, something definitely shifted. You had Black voters and like you said, particularly Black women being pivotal in key races in Alabama and Virginia that really cemented them as a force in national Democratic politics, right? But Black voters aren't just content to come in at the last minute. They're wanting to shape elections from the beginning, enter the Black primary. And so how do you see Black folks in this cycle and the issues that matter the most to them already shaping this race?
In a lot of ways, Black voters are just like other voters within the United States. Their number one concern have to do with economics. Their top five concerns have to do with healthcare, with jobs, job security, social security. But on the other hand, we know that race and concern for race, and particularly how the candidates interact or understand race, is deeply important to Black voters across the board, even if they may interpret it differently. So Black voters, when they are polled, when they're asked about it, may not say race is number one on my target list of issues. No, they're much more likely to say things like wealth gap, education, jobs. But they are constantly well aware of how race factors in. And so this is really important as we're thinking about the primaries, not simply because it's about, you know, differentiating between the different candidates and seeing who can pull the most votes, but it's also about who can motivate Black voters to turn up and to show up and to come out in large numbers, significant numbers, election-changing numbers. Because it's not just about who do these people like, but how do I prevent these voters from being disaffected? So how do I prevent them from staying home? How do I encourage them? How do I, you know, get them on board? Because that enthusiasm part is really important. You need Black support on every single level.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Black women voters, the voters who always show up, right, and who I focused on heavily during the 2018 midterm elections, mm-hmm, and I'm covering headed into 2020. Black women have long been leaders in their communities, but they've also often taken kind of a backseat or been denied the spotlight. But that's definitely not the case that I'm seeing now. I'm covering Black women who are the candidates, organizers, voters, and key campaign staff who are really driving the course of Democratic politics. So what's going on with our country and with Black women that's causing them to step up in this moment? And how do we see what's going on with the culture and Black women translating into our politics?
I really want to emphasize that point you just made, Erin, which is that Black women are everywhere. I mean, they are a crucial part of the electoral process. Mm-hmm. And we see that in the intersection with the Democratic Party, not simply just in kind of lip service or saying, yes, you know, we honor Black women, but we're actually seeing it in a number of different forums, right? A forum for women of color, where many of the candidates came and basically had to show and tell, mm-hmm, or the amount of emphasis that polling organizations are putting into Black voters and Black women voters. Black women have always been invested in the electoral process. Mm-hmm. Back in the day when African Americans were predominantly voting for Republican candidates, it was still Black women who were the backbone of this electoral, mm-hmm, process. So we're seeing a lot of work that these people are doing on the ground, that Black women are doing on the ground, and essentially saying, you know, you cannot do this without us.
Mm-hmm.
And candidates recognizing this, actually looking around and saying, you know what, this election would have been different if it weren't for Black women. This election would have been different if it weren't for Black women. We're also seeing Black women running for office and winning in numbers that are pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing Black women raising money. We're seeing Black women becoming the face of various political movements, mm-hmm, particularly within the Democratic Party, and becoming prominent symbolic figures within movements on the left. And all of that matters for the general election, but also for this idea of the Black primary.
I feel smarter already. We can't have this conversation without pointing out the fact that there is a Black woman, the only Black woman, mm-hmm, running for president in this Democratic field, Senator Kamala Harris of California. And she is the most formidable Black woman to run for president since Brooklyn Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm. You guys can Google her if you don't know who I'm talking about. And Harris has said that her campaign is inspired by Chisholm. I want to ask you, Leah, what does Harris's presence in this race mean in the Black primary?
Harris is such a fascinating figure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not simply that she is a Black woman who is, you know, running for office. And she often talks about this. She's also a Black woman who is organically connected to various Black organizations and communities. So if we think about the Lynx, if we think about Alpha Kappa, mm-hmm, Alpha, if we think about Howard University, and all of those things matter, particularly because she has made it such a central part of her campaign. At the same time, what we're seeing, you know, in addition to kind of the symbolic significance of her running and then also kind of the real tangible significance, mm-hmm, of having a Black woman run for such a prominent position and be essentially, you know, one of the front runners, one of the people to beat, we're seeing the intersection of Black women voters with Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really interesting because it's not necessarily what you would assume.
Right.
So there's been a lot of talk about a concept called descriptive representation. So if somebody looks like me, I'm going to support them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're actually seeing that Black women historically have voted based on their policy preferences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 2016, we saw that Black women registered the highest rate of anxiety about the general election, in part because they were concerned about the policy outcomes. So what would this nation look like under Donald Trump? That was a question, mm-hmm, that Black women were asking before the general election.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, moving into the Democratic primary, Black women are asking that same question. Black men are asking that question as well in very, very high numbers. But, you know, if you look at the polling data, if you look at public opinion, Black women are asking it at extraordinary levels. Almost, you know, almost all Black women are asking these kinds of questions and are deliberating based on policy.
Well, that's definitely a lot of what I've heard from the Black women that I've been talking to,
right,
on the trail. So let's talk some more about where the Black primary is playing out on the ground. You already name-checked a few of our institutions where I've seen this happening, Black churches, the NAACP, the National Urban League conferences, at Essence Fest and She the People, where I was. She the People, by the way, was like Lemonade meets 2020. But where is the Black primary headed next? Will we see 2020 candidates, for example, headed to an HBCU homecoming near you?
I mean, if they were smart.
Yeah.
If they're smart and if they're savvy, you know, they're going to have to be everywhere. Because part of what Black communities, and I use communities very broadly and very widely, what Black communities want to see is not somebody who shows up around election time, sells a bunch of goods and a bunch of promises, mm-hmm. and then disappears. They actually want somebody who is listening to them, somebody who is engaged with their community, somebody that they know and somebody that they can trust.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for further proof of the Black primary, it was just announced that Texas Southern University is going to host the presidential primary debate in September, which is huge. I mean, I don't think
that's big.
Seen a debate at a historically Black college before. Maybe you can tell me as a historian. And it's not just any HBCU, right? Like, it's the alma mater of pioneering Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. You guys can Google her, too, if you don't know who I'm talking about. But is that right?
So, you know, what's interesting here is that various political organizations, various political candidates moved within HBCU worlds quite strategically in the past. We've seen political candidates ranging from anyone from somebody like Barack Obama or Bill Clinton to even Ronald Reagan mm-hmm. reach out and appeal to HBCUs when they see fit.
Right.
So in 1980, Ronald Reagan actually sponsors Black College Day 1980. And, you know, we can look around and say, in what world does this work? But for Reagan, it becomes an opportunity to say, you know, hey, look, don't look at what I'm doing over there. Look at what I'm doing right here.
I'm Erin Haynes, and I've been speaking with Leah Wright Regeer. This is On the Ground. We'll be right back. This is On the Ground. I'm Erin Haynes. I'm speaking with historian Leah Wright Regeer. I have to ask you, because in my reporting, I've heard from people who are cautious about focusing too much on race. They're worried about alienating right. white Democrats who haven't voted in the majority for a Democrat in generations. But then there's this other school of thought that suggests a coalition that expands the base with Black and brown voters is the way to win.
Right.
So who's right, Leah?
One of the interesting things to me is that we've seen historically that when Democrats invest in Black and brown voters, not just Black and brown voters, traditional voters who have come out in full force, but also unlikely voters, non-traditional voters, new voters, that they have done exceptionally well. Exceptionally well. I don't think that it is wrong. I don't think it's insane. I don't think it's bad politics to actually listen to your base and to appeal to your base. And it would seem that many of the Democratic primary contenders are beginning to understand that. At this point, it is simple political math. You need these people. You need these voters. And we've seen this time and time again. It's not about pitting these groups against each other. Mm-hmm. It's not saying that you have, you know, if you talk about race, if you appeal to these groups, that therefore you cannot talk to white voters or vice versa. But instead, how are you going to do it at the same time? Because there is a way to do it, and there's a way to do it without alienating anyone. One of the first things that politicians, any candidate, should be focusing on, focus on non-voters. And don't call them, you know, don't call them the Black voters who didn't come out or, you know, who stayed home, you're angry at them, whatever. But actually think about non-voters as a political block and think about why they didn't come out. Think about what might have kept them home. And actually, there are organizations, you know, like Gen Forward that look at instances like this. You know, some of these organizations that have actually been studying non-voters, in particular non-voters of color or young non-voters, have found that it's not simply just political disaffection or alienation, but also things like not being able to get to a voting booth, verbally discouraged from voting, inability to take time off from work, long lines, mm-hmm. You know, things like that. So there are this whole host of issues that we don't really quite understand yet, although we have an idea anecdotally that we should be investing time and effort into. And politicians should be investing time and effort into, both as part of the democratic process, but also as a means of understanding, you know, how do I generate turnout? How do I get people to come out and vote for me?
Absolutely. So I think one of the clearest signs that we were headed towards a Black primary came pretty early on this year when the issue of reparations came up in the 2020 Democratic primary, which you couldn't have paid me to think that reparations in 2019 was going to be something that we were having a serious conversation about, especially among mainstream Democratic candidates. Can you talk about the role that has played and how that really is probably the most representative example of a Black primary that we've seen so far?
The reparations conversation is really important. And it may feel surprising, but it's actually a reflection of the kind of work that, you know, Black organizers, Black leaders, even Black politicians have been doing, you know, for decades, actually for generations. What is striking is that reparations has really become part of the Democratic candidates, not just their conversation and their, you know, symbolism or gestures, mm-hmm. but actually several of the candidates have incorporated reparations into their platform.
Yes.
And, you know, that is something that is noticeable. Now, it's not something that is showing up on polling, right? So if you poll a bunch of people on the street, a bunch of Black voters in the street, they're not listing reparations as their deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we should ignore it. I think it is something. And clearly the candidates have identified it as something that is really important. So it'll be interesting to watch candidates navigate around this conversation. I don't think that this is a deal breaker for most Black voters, but they are going to be paying attention to how candidates address it.
Clearly, you're plugged into the Black primary. I'm wondering what you're keeping an eye on as we move forward towards 2020.
I'll start with how the media covers this.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that, you know, we should see and that we want to see are stories and coverage of the work that Black people are doing on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Black politicians or just not just outreach, but the actual, you know, engagement between, you know, the various communities. But then what are organizers doing? What are protesters doing? What are leaders in, you know, local and state communities doing? Because that's where the real stories are. I think you also, you know, I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to how, and I think, you know, media should be paying a lot of attention to this, around the idea of non-voters and engagement with non-voters.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that media picked up on pretty late was the kind of work that Stacey Abrams was doing around the democratic process and around increasing, you know, the number of voters by going after unlikely voters. That is a story in and of itself. And that's one that deserves a lot of attention, particularly in areas that we traditionally think of as swing states or battle areas.
Well, listen, I know you're going to be watching the Black primary. I'll definitely
Absolutely.
Be covering it and probably checking back in with you for your take. So, Leah, thank you so much for the conversation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
So here are my thoughts for the road. That was really insightful and affirming. Leah gave me a lot to think about as I head back out to report on the Black primary. Her point about reparations is so smart, because it isn't so much about the issue as it is the candidates' responses to the notion of reparations. And now, I'm definitely going to think about non-voters as a constituency, and I intend to report on them headed into next year. These Black voters, Black men in particular, could be considered swing voters, and political journalists should treat them as such. As more Black candidates seek national office, we could see the growing influence of HBCUs, of Black fraternities and sororities, and of the Black church, not just as an organizing force, but because of candidates' direct ties to these cultural institutions. Lastly, Leah made a good point that is also a core part of my reporting, the idea that race and racism are on the ballot in 2020, particularly for Black voters. As much as education, healthcare, and the economy, how candidates plan to address the hyper-racial climate in this country matters. And their lack of a plan could mean a lack of support at the polls. Thanks for being with me. On the Ground is a production of WHYY and the Associated Press. I'm Erin Haynes. For more of my work, please follow me on Twitter @emarvelous. See you on the ground.